The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Happy post-Christmas Sunday. If we ever use this as an archive, sorry guys, it's the 27th of December in real life.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that.
I know, I try to make them kind of generic. How can you be generic on Sunday after Christmas?
Yeah, really.
So let's see, I'm Aaron Ryan.
Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And, you know, if one of us is missing, it's like We the People with a limp. But if we're all here together, then things go off without a hitch. We're actually on time. Our guest is on the phone. We're not actually starting the new year off right because that's next week. but I've sort of hedged our bets for next week, actually. We have a guest coming in the studio. So we won't have any of those phone fun things going on next week. So we have Pastor Guy Asherman next week. And I believe we have Shelley Gibbs coming in from CareNet Pregnancy Center.
So oh, wonderful.
So we're going to talk about, you know, abortion and pregnancy centers and Christianity and all that good stuff to start off the new year. Seemed like a good plan. We did it last year. I think we do it every year. Just, I don't know, we think of him at the beginning of the year.
We had Guy on a year ago, that's right.
Yeah, we always kind of do that at the beginning of the year. Kind of nice. So, we were supposed to be gone today, but I was reading an article about wolves. You know, that topic that just gets us all angry and everything. We haven't done any updates on wolves lately, and I read this terrific article by Rena Weatherelt. It was in Sky Country Journal. Somebody forwarded it to me on email, and it was, I think, the 23rd, was last, whatever that is, Wednesday. And I thought, gee, our plans got canceled for travel after Christmas. I wonder if she's around and could do an interview with us at the last minute. God love her. She does email on Christmas. It's my favorite part. It was fantastic. That was my Christmas present. Woo! We have a show.
Yeah. We get to talk about something that
makes us all mad. That
makes us all angry.
Yeah, makes us all angry.
Yeah.
I know. We were going to try to do something, you know, cheerful and peaceful and all. Yeah, well, forget that. So, and this is a slightly different take than what we've done before because we always talk about, like, the diseases that wolves bring and all that sort of thing. And our friends I know in Philadelphia that'll be hearing this on Monday are thinking, who cares about wolves? Because I'm thinking they haven't released them in Philadelphia or New Jersey yet. However, Rena has done a fabulous job of, I really like her tagline on the article. I'll just read that and you'll get the gist. How a public-private partnership skirted the law and destroyed a national treasure and what we must do to restore the rule of law and the Northern Yellowstone elk herd. So when you get into the public-private partnership and all that, that involves your tax dollars.
But it's not just about the elk.
They're coming for your wallet.
The elk is a small portion of what we've destroyed back there.
True.
And it really does affect everybody.
Well, I mean, if you like what goes on in this country, if you ever intend to take your kids or anybody to Yellowstone or Yosemite or any of these national parks that you think are waiting for you out here,
yeah.
Good luck.
Well, you know, if you like paying, you know, $10 a pound for beef, you know.
Oh, and then there's that.
The
cost of beef.
Yeah.
So there are all sorts of things I like to have kind of started out just so you don't to tune us out. We'll get to more politics and stuff later in the year, but we thought we ought to do some natural resource stuff since these things are all they're not all from this administration, obviously. Everybody likes to, you know, say the last 7 years has changed everything. It's been a long time coming.
It has.
The Endangered Species Act back in the 70s. So this has been a little freight train coming for a long time. However, it has picked up a lot of speed. And whoever we elect next year better help us roll this back or good luck to us.
Yeah. Well, it's already, you know, we've already got these magical wolves that have appeared in our territory now. So
yeah, they just show up out of nowhere.
They just came down from the mountain.
They haven't been here since, what, 1920? And then poof, they're in Northern California.
First there was one. Now there's like, well, we have two packs now that are starting in our area. And there will be more.
And we have no water, but they came here anyway, which was terrific. They must have brought like water bottles and stuff. So anyway, we're going to be irreverent and snarky, but factual today. So There's your big preface. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. I have a ton of information on there. Not only the article we're discussing, but a lot of Rena's videos are on there. And I've got a couple other things to add that I kind of forgot to add yesterday. But so keep refreshing your page. There you go. That's all my commercial announcement. So, got Rena on there. She was raised
has been here the entire time, yes.
Nice. Okay, so she knows what I said. She was raised on a cattle and a sheep ranch in remote southeastern Montana. She grew up in a culture revolving around animal husbandry. Leaving the ranch after high school, she spent a career in local media as a sales consultant and copywriter for radio, television, and newspaper. In 2010, she began filming and editing half-hour stories from the rural Northwest, airing them as Sky Country Journal on cable throughout Montana and Jackson, Wyoming. Rena currently resides in the Bitterroot Valley of Montana and writes occasionally and produces video stories. So you can find her at skycountryjournal.com, and I've got that all linked up for you on the website. So, hi, Rena.
This just
hi,
in.
How's it going? Oh, Bob's got an update for us.
You may or may not have heard this, but Fish and Wildlife just reported the first livestock kill by wolves in Siskiyou County.
Oh, imagine that.
How timely is that?
Wolves killed livestock already, but you know what? They told me in all those meetings it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, but actually that happened quite some time ago, and they never admitted that it was wolves. And I'm glad to hear now that they're finally coming to the party.
Did Fish and Wildlife actually say that they agreed it was a wolf kill?
That's what I was told.
Nice.
I'll see if I can find some additional information.
Lovely. Yeah. Well, I guess that's better than we would have anticipated.
The games have begun already here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Rena, you're in an area where a wolf kill is like, yeah. Call me when you have more than one. Where would you like to start with us today?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Aaron. I appreciate it. And hello to your listeners. I'm in the southeastern or southwestern corner of the state of Montana, and we are kind of ground zero for what was an illegal introduction of a non-native species of wolf 20 years ago, a big 20-year anniversary this year.
Oh, wow.
So we look back and survey the damage.
Yeah, it's been extensive.
Well, your article was a clue. I don't remember if somebody in Siskiyou County forwarded it to me. I think it was Dawn, and your title is, "Do You Realize Now What You Have Done?" I'm going to say, no, they haven't figured it out yet, but we have. Like, the citizens in your area have figured it out, haven't they?
You know, in fact, the question is obviously just rhetorical, but it was their intent all along to move cattle out of the national forest, repeal or revise the Taylor Grazing Act. Make life difficult for ranchers, and then there's conservation easements and all kinds of opportunities for them to take control of private land and get it out of private hands. And they really have no love for ranchers. This goes all the way back to how much grain these cattle consume, and if we would just reduce our beef consumption, we could feed millions more people. And, so ranchers and their flatulent cattle have really been demonized. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of part of their whole modus operandi. And kind of why I got involved in the first place is that, they have to smear the local people and the ranchers and hunters and so on and make them out to be ignorant, superstitious, uneducated, dumb, in order to, I guess, pull off the trauma that they're inflicting on them without remorse.
Yeah, because, just to clarify for people who don't follow this issue at all, and I kind of assume that it's the bulk of people who don't follow, so I want to make sure that we don't just speak about things like everybody already knows the whole thing, but when you say to make the ranchers out to be superstitious and just a bunch of knuckle-dragging country people, a big part of that comes from things like wolves don't attack cattle, that they won't attack dogs, that they won't go near your property, that they won't attack people, that you'll never see them, they'll be out in the wild, and all this fear about them impacting humans and domesticated animals, dogs, cats, that kind of thing, and also livestock is just a myth. Because that's what they say.
It's propaganda, definitely. Most of the wolf biologists that even, there's kind of a cult. I call them the dogs are people too type.
Yep.
But, they have their heroes, and so much of what was written back in the day, it's just been totally debunked. So, wolves are not the fragile little creatures that, if you take out the alpha male, then they might not reproduce, and all the drama surrounding the fragility of these wolves, when in fact, if they have a good food supply, they're just, they breed like pigs. They're just voracious breeders.
Sure, and they'll take whatever's close by. Well, how about this? Here's an article that just was funny. It was right after I had written to you thinking, I definitely want to do this weekend. Here's this article, what to do if you're attacked by a pack of wolves. Okay? I mean, there's really only one answer, pray for death, I guess. This is the article. You're out for a jog in the woods. Suddenly you find yourself surrounded by a pack of wolves. There must be 8 of them. Panic sets in. What should you do? Here we go. I'll skip to the key points of what you should do. First, don't run. This will make you look like prey, which is a bad thing. Remember, wolves are hunters, just in case you didn't know that already. Number 2, don't stare the animal down. This looks like a threat. So remember, you're surrounded by a pack of 8 wolves. Don't turn your back on the wolves. Not sure exactly physiologically how you make that happen.
You're surrounded,
so that was kind of a stupid one just on the face of it. I like this one a lot, though. Make yourself appear scary. You are looking at 8 wolves, and you are going to appear scary, not scared, scary.
So you show your teeth?
No, you're supposed to shout, throw stones in case you want to bend over with the wolves that you're back there. Raise your arms over your head. I'm not sure how you're supposed to throw the stones with your arms over your head, but you run around with your arms over your head and you shout. I like this one, too. If you've entered an enclosure, back away slowly, moving toward the exit with your back against the fence. entered an enclosure, like you're out for a walk, and then you're surrounded by 8 wolves, and you go, holy crap.
I just entered a cage with eight wolves in it.
I'm in an enclosure. Okay, this is my favorite one. This is the one that the movies use all the time, and they do it the wrong way. Don't look scared or fall down. This will encourage an attack. See, the first thing I'm going to be is scared, and I'm definitely falling down. And if things, here's the capper, like if you just have exhausted all your efforts, you can't get out of the enclosure, your scariness isn't working, and if it really gets bad, in case being surrounded wasn't bad enough, curl into a ball and protect your face.
Because they won't bite you if you can't see their face.
If you can't see them, they won't bite you. It's like, are you kidding me? This is the kind of advice people are getting. So, but honestly, on the face of it, if you just read that, you would think, oh, okay, all right, so I'm hiking in a national forest and I get surrounded by wolves. I can just look scary and throw stones and raise my arms and they're going to run away.
And if they don't, I'll just curl up in a ball and hide my face and then they won't bite me. Exactly. They'll go away.
Yeah, imagine, imagine the surprise.
There was a horrific story out of Alaska just, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And a young school teacher from Pennsylvania went out after school with her little headphones on, I think, for a jog.
Oh.
And she was attacked and killed by wolves. And, of course, it was snowy, so they could see the whole scene where she'd been drugged and where she tried to get up and get away. And So I don't know if she ended up covering her face with her hands or not.
Bottom line is it didn't matter and it won't matter. And if you think it will, well, I guess Darwin, you know, had the right idea.
Yeah, they just as well have told you to fold your hands and pray.
Exactly. Well, you know, when people think that that's how you could defend yourself, and then you're constantly told that, because I went to all these stupid hearings and whatnot, and there were a lot. There was a lady in the audience, and I've said this before, wish I had the lady's name. She got up to the microphone. She was on C-SPAN. It was a public hearing in front of the California Fish and Game Commission. And she was just weeping. She just wanted them to list the wolves and as an endangered species. They just had to. And after she kind of got done with that, she said her reason was so that her three-year-old would have the opportunity to meet one in their backyard.
Hmm.
That's the mindset.
Special.
Like this is going to be like a good thing? Or
they have some emotional connection to the predator.
We can do pop psychiatry here. We're good.
Amateur psychology.
Yeah, we're good with it.
Well, also, we're not talking about the wolves that were there originally. They have brought in these Canadian gray wolves, and those are much larger, aren't they?
Well, that was, you know, when I say that this public-private partnership skirted the law, the first thing that they did was ignored the fact that there has always been a wolf here.
Right.
It was called the Canis lupus irremotus. It was a Rocky Mountain timber wolf. And you know, they did clear this area of wolves after they wiped out the buffalo and settlers came. But they didn't get them all, and they lived here, and people, you know, loved and enjoyed the native wolves. They studied them and watched them. And
how did that population stay in check? I mean, did they hunt those, or did they just, there were a small enough number where they didn't overpopulate?
Well, you know, who knows? Some of them could have been released over the years. But the fact is, wolves are very, very mobile. They travel, you know, huge miles. And I think they just live here, you know. They just, there was a small population of the Irremotus, which is a much smaller wolf, and which is not as pack-oriented, and that's, you know, part of the problem that we have with wolves above, like, a cougar or mountain lion is that they run in packs, and so there might be 12, or there might be 25 of them. And the Irremotus was not as pack-oriented. They may have run in pairs. So they didn't cause a lot of problems, and if they did come out on private property, you know, people shot them.
And were the elk a prey animal for that wolf?
I think probably so, but probably more deer. And, you know, I don't know that they took on the moose and the elk as much because it takes a pack, you know, to bring down those bigger animals.
Right, right.
All right, we're coming back. Coming back with Rena in just like 2 minutes. Need to thank our advertisers here for letting us expose this fraud and have a little fun while we're doing it. I'm sure Bob's got some good music for us today. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I'll be right back.
Soul, then it's just your body, then
Well, we're back. We're talking about wolves. We're talking about what's happened in Yellowstone and the introduction of the gray wolf, the Canadian gray wolf, which has pretty much taken over Yellowstone. In your article, Rena, you talk about, you kind of get into the background a little bit and how 20 years ago these wolves were introduced. And at that time, the elk population was around 19,000. The herd was one of the largest, if not the largest, elk herd in the country. And 20 years later, that herd's been reduced to around 4,000 animals. You know, not to mention the other animals that have been driven almost to extinction because of the wolves. How far down can that elk herd go before it's going to be too late?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. There are a lot of elk still in Yellowstone. That is just one of several herds. And, you know, if you take the predators off of them, shoot them with a gun and kill them dead, then that night those elk are safe. So you can turn them around in a season or two if you get the predators off of them. But you know, one of the propaganda pieces that they put out there is that wolves won't destroy their own prey base. But wolves don't have the power of reason, and they will absolutely destroy their own prey base, and then they
move
on over the next ridge.
Right, right. So they're attacking the elk herds. What else are they decimating? We have moose. What else?
Well, you know, when I back in the 90s, or in, up into the early 2000s, I spent all my spare time out in the woods. I just loved being out there, winter, summer, spring, or fall. And we would run across herds of little grouse of different, different kinds of grouse. And moose up every ravine. The mountains around here were full of mule deer. Now you go out there, and all those animals are gone.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And what is that? What's that done to the the folks that kind of depended on that? Population base to survive. Yeah, what's going on with the economy back there?
It has absolutely destroyed the hunting economy. Of course, right on top of it, they closed down the forest during the Clinton administration, and so Montana is now one of the poorest states in the nation. We did have a it wasn't just an economy, it was a culture.
Right.
The horses and mules that were part of it, it was a way of life. And a lot of that has been destroyed. It's not, there's still game and there's still a few outfitters, but many of them went out of business. And certainly now that they closed Deckard Flats, and are severely limiting the hunting in the district just north of Yellowstone National Park, what's left of a 100-year-old culture is just going to wither and die completely.
Right. And it's not just the outfitters. I mean, you had folks that ran hotels, restaurants, all that business has dried up, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It certainly has. And, Montana has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation. It has been a terrible blow.
See, and for all the people that think that, hunting was bad anyway, so we didn't want people doing it. And you have a lot of those folks that are animal rights activists, so they didn't want you killing animals anyway. But I like in your article in the background segment, the northern Yellowstone elk herd numbered over 19,000 in 1995, and now it's down to 4,000. So what about those animal rights? I mean, those guys, they're not being killed by hunting. After 100 years of hunting, they still had 19,000 of them in 95. You put the wolves in there, and you had 300, here we go. District was a general tag area, home to moose, around 300 bighorn sheep, abundant mule deer and antelope. People came from around the state to fill their freezer with wholesome, nutritious wild meat. And all over the country, for that matter, a lot of people took time off and went out during hunting season. So even though it was constantly hunted, you guys maintained your numbers, and now you add wolves, you're down to 4,000, I think your thing said.
And it's not just the Northern Yellowstone elk herd or, you know, the moose that have really been hit hard. The Lolo herd in central Idaho, and then, of course, the Bitterroot Valley here where I live is just across the border from that. And the only elk really to speak of are down now in the valleys on the ranches, which is causing, you know, a whole new set of problems for ranchers because they tear out fences and
sure.
eat their hay. And but, you know, I wanted to go back to the public-private partnership and kind of finish how they skirted the law there.
Yeah, and that's a biggie because I don't think people realize what the cost is. I don't think they realize they're paying for it. I think it's easy to look at this as an issue that doesn't affect them. I don't hunt. I don't live in Montana. I think wolves are pretty, and so this is all working out great.
Well, they've spent jillions of dollars on wolves. In taxpayer money in the last 20 years. So, you know, they constantly are flying and collaring and tracking and, you know, just spending enormous amounts of money coddling these wolves when they're absolutely over the target goal by hundreds in all of these states. But there is such pressure from the, you know, the social clique that revolves around wolves that, you know, they're still very cautious in any efforts to take out wolves that are causing problems.
Yeah, and why do you think that is? Why do they how do they maintain this power base?
Let's take the organization called Defenders of Wildlife.
Yes.
That organization is a not-for-profit corporation. They have tax-exempt status. And you know, one of the ways that they earn money is by using, you know, pictures of wolf pups, save the pups from ranchers. And
they're always little, too. They're like little fuzzy puppy-looking things.
It's like a little forest dog. And they just want to have fun out there in the forest, and the ranchers are just telling them. And so anyway, they get donations from people, you know, just by hitting the heartstrings. But their other income stream comes from filing lawsuits against the Department of the Interior on any action that is taken by any federal agency that might possibly involve an endangered species. So, you know, what we kind of figured out here after, you know, they kept suing every time the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would delist the wolf, take it off the list, they would sue and make them put it back on. And it turns out that these environmental organizations, like Defenders of Wildlife, are paid damages from the U.S. Treasury every time they win one of these lawsuits. And they are also reimbursed for their attorney's fees, which are exorbitant. But literally, these groups have taken billions. According to Karen Bud Fallon, who you're probably familiar with, they have literally are just sucking billions of dollars out of the U.S. Treasury, not just over wolves, but any any federal action that might affect, say, a grizzly bear or a lynx or a, you know, any endangered species. And so it's quite a cottage industry. And that's why if you say, well, it makes no sense, but yes, it makes great sense because
it's lucrative.
They're living.
Yeah, it's really lucrative. We have to take another quick break. We got a little behind on our break. Somehow we have to fit two more in right at the top of the hour. but you're going to hang with us for the whole time, so we'll be fine. You can find all the information we're chatting about and some extra stuff as I'm adding it as we speak on WeThePeopleRadio.us. We will be back with Rena Witherall talking about wolves. Just in case the music wasn't a clue.
In his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
We're back, talking about wolves.
Rena, I'm reading your article. I'm trying to stay sane and not blow my mind. You were talking about how they've skirted the law and this whole Endangered Species Act. In part of the article here, you talk about experimental populations and how one section of the Endangered Species Act allows them to introduce an experimental population as long as it doesn't interfere with geographically with non-experimental populations of the same species. How'd they get away with that? Because didn't they just dump them right on top of the timber wolves?
Yes, they did. And, you know, they got away with it the same way that they got away with you know, taking $60 million out of the Pittman-Robertson Fund illegally. They just did it.
And for folks who don't know what that is, can you...
The Pittman-Robertson Fund is a federal fund that was passed, I think, back in the 30s, and it collects taxes from firearms, ammunition, and other sporting equipment, and it puts it into this fund, and then by law, all except about 5% of that money for administrative purposes has to go back to state fish and wildlife agencies. But during the Clinton administration, zealots who desperately wanted to bring in an experimental species, they just took about $60 million out of that money. And when they were found out by congressional investigation, the head of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, her name was Jamie Rappaport Clark, told Congress that Bruce Babbitt, her boss, had told her she could spend the money any way she wanted.
Oh, that's nice.
That hardly ever happens.
They all got big bonuses, and they built a new office in San Francisco, and then they used money to go up to Canada and bring in the largest wolf in North America.
And the gray wolf, the Canadian gray wolf, I mean, that's like over a 100-pound wolf compared to the timber wolf, which is more like a coyote. Isn't that right?
That's right. I mean, they were bigger than a coyote. They were a medium-sized wolf, 70 to maybe 120 pounds. But the wolves that they brought in are enormous. They're a size bigger, and subsequent DNA studies show that those wolves have Eurasian genetics. And I don't know if any of your listeners remember, but you can actually see Russia from Alaska.
That would explain the Eurasian genetics.
From somebody's porch.
Exactly. So the Eremotus, the way I understand it, after the ice started to recede, after the ice age, wolves came up from the south, from Mexico and South America. And so those wolves were, you know, had much longer genetic footprint in North America. But the wolves that they brought in were wolves that came across the ice bridge in waves over the years. And so they not only have a Eurasian genetics, they had Eurasian diseases. And, you know, one of the most horrifying things that has happened with this wolf introduction has been the introduction of deadly parasites that affect humans, and they affect the prey base. So the moose now that are remaining have a disease spread by these wolves, and so do the elk, and people in Idaho have already been infected, and it's kind of like cancer. The little parasites grow in cysts all over your body and your lungs and liver and brain, and they have to be removed like removing a cancerous tumor, and if they rupture, you go into toxic shock and die.
Mm, that's lovely. And this is something that was not here before, that the local animal populations didn't have, and now now it's spreading out through all the different species in that area because of the wolves.
That's right. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, I talked about how I love being out in the mountains here. I would take, you know, mom and the kids, and we go out huckleberry picking, and, you know, I always would carry a sidearm, but as long as we weren't in grizz country, there was no big, you know, big threat out there. But now, can you imagine taking your mom and your little kids out, and suddenly you're surrounded by a half a dozen, 100-plus-pound wolves?
Yeah, because they're not there just, you know, hanging out and going to watch you. They're going to eat you because they don't have any fear of humans, do they?
They are they're developing fear, but absolutely they have no fear of anything unless they've been shot at. They do get very smart very fast.
Hmm. Yeah, because I'm gonna add, that's the one thing I forgot to do today. I'm gonna add that article, the one from the Real Wolf book about the let's see, here we go, my favorite, page 75. Wolves kill bridal party. So for all those people that are still living in La La Land and think wolves don't attack people, this is an article from the New York Times published March 19th, 1911. Only two escape out of 120 in Asiatic Russia. They were tragic details of the fate of a wedding party attacked by wolves in Asiatic Russia while driving on sleds to the bride's house. So where the banquet was supposed to have taken place. There's a whole article. Big long strip article, and I'll add that on the website for those of you who think that, you know, the wolves will just run away, and as long as you cover your face, you're all good.
Yeah, and yeah, there were firearms around in those days too. And
well,
and
yeah, I'm sure 100 and, what, two escaped out of 120. I'm sure 118 people didn't just stand there and wave their arms around.
No, I mean, I'm sure at that time, not everybody, but a lot of people carried firearms when they were out in the woods.
Where did all those stories come from? All the Little Red Riding Hood and all those stories, they were there to scare children and, you know, make them aware, because they had lots of wolves, have lots of wolves in Europe and always have. It's not worked out very well. Bob, do you have a break? Is that what you're flagging us for? Very good. Last break before the top of the hour. We're here with Rena Witherell. We are discussing her fabulous article you can find online at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Yeah, I want to get back into those diseases, too. We're not done talking about that.
All right, we're coming back with diseases and Bill.
Couple of burnt out roosters on the line. Look out below, because here we go. Well, we commenced trucking, and then hens commenced the clucking.
Nice, Bob.
Earl took out a match.
Okay, Bill, hit the disease.
The disease.
The disease.
Yeah. So these wolves have been introduced into Yellowstone, pretty much taken over. Can't hunt them. I think they only issue a couple of hunting permits a year now. And
I think how many wolf permits do they do? Is it three, or was that the elk permits, Rena?
It's three in that particular hunting district. Montana has many hunting districts, and most of them don't have quotas. So that's been, you know, a long, hard battle to fight. But in the area just north of Yellowstone, they only allow three wolves to be harvested. And the reason for that is because the wolf watchers name these wolves, and they tag them, and they write stories about them and pictures.
God.
And then it's just, you know, if one of them ends up dead, it's, you know, a big
tragedy. Yeah. So this disease that you were talking about is a parasite. And now, if you don't come in contact with a wolf, how do you get this disease?
Well, it's spread through the scat. So the wolves are just carriers of it. It doesn't harm them, but they spread it through their scat. And then these eggs are very resilient, and they just scatter all over the foliage. So even if you're picking huckleberries and eating them, you are exposing yourself to it. Certainly, if you're walking and you get these on your boots, and then you walk in the house, you're bringing it in,
right?
And your pets are exposed.
Well, that's a biggie right there. Your dogs and cats are out there, and they're in and out of your house. They're going to be carriers as well.
And it isn't just the animals who get it; it's people too.
Right.
It's people, and Jim Beer is the wildlife law enforcement officer that uncovered the theft of the Pittman Robertson money. He says people in Russia and Asia do not let dogs in their house, and the reason for that is because some of these deadly parasites that are more prevalent over there and that they have now introduced here. And it's not just this particular these wolves are 100% infested with Echinococcus granulosis, but they're also vectors of other diseases, including terrible things like the plague and smallpox. You know, the wolves were blamed by early biologists for the spread of smallpox through the Midwestern Indian villages back in the day. But they spread things like anthrax and brucellosis, and they also spread, I won't be able to say the name of the disease, but it gets into dairy cattle and causes the dairy cattle to abort. So as these wolves move into Washington and Oregon and California and into our, you know, our dairy and our bread baskets, they're spreading really deadly diseases into what was once a very healthy, pristine ecosystem.
And, right, they, and right. these are and the people that advocate this, the part that just gets me, the folks that are advocating this are all spending, you know, 10 times more than the rest of us for, I don't know, lettuce at Whole Foods because they've got to have everything organic. And yet they're in love with a predator that carries an incredibly deadly disease.
Right. And the problem with the wolves is people will say, well, you know, ground squirrels, you know, carry the plague and, you know, rats. And but they don't migrate like the wolves do with, you know, with the other migrating herds. I mean, that I would imagine that wolves would spread it out over the, you know, a bigger geographic area than pretty much any other animal, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. Wolves cover large areas, and, you know, they do it all the time. So they're constantly moving from, you know, your domestic sheep down in the valley to your bighorn sheep up in the mountains.
Right.
And spreading, you know, really an ecological disaster is what they are.
Exactly. Hey, we're gonna break at the top of the hour here. We're going to come back.
When we come back, we're going to play our favorite video about wolves, how wolves change rivers.
Well, it's an audio from the video.
Audio from the video. You're going to love it. We'll be right back.